Welcome, welcome to Freaked Out. It's your co-hosts, Liz and Landon.
What's up, everybody?
Well, it's February, and to me, this month gives me hope. It's like the spring eve. One more month of yucky snow, and then we will all be saved.
Hopefully.
Basically, today I wanted to start off the show a little different. I wanted to get Landon to give me an experience that freaked him out. Any particular story you'd like to share with us today?
Oh, well, I have a few stories, but let's see. Let's start with one of my first real crazy experiences. I would say I was about 12, 13 years old. There was myself and two of my friends and my sister were all hanging out at my house, which, by the way, my house was pretty haunted.
Ah, that's
it was
awesome.
About 150 years old, and it was passed down through my entire family. Which ended up being my grandma's house. So one night we decided, my friend had gotten a Ouija board and was like, let's try to connect to somebody. And I'm like, okay. So we went into my room, which was the highest, one of the highest activity rooms besides the attic. And we were sitting there and the thing was moving around on the letters and everything. My sister got like upset because she couldn't understand what it was trying to say to us. And she basically was like, this is stupid. And she like pushed the Ouija board and the thing like off to the side and she stood up.
Oh no. Number one cardinal rule for that.
Exactly. Immediately my door was like open a crack. It immediately slammed shut. And we had candles lit in my room. They went out completely. Candles out, door shuts. My window was open a crack and it turned into like blowing all over the place. So it was just a crazy experience. Everybody started yelling and screaming. We ran down the stairs. My grandma's down there like, what's going on? My sister's like, there's a devil in our house.
Well,
and we like,
yeah,
ran down the street and didn't come home for at least 2 hours.
That would have freaked me out too. Well, thank you for that. I love getting your perspective on your own stories. So today we are going to be talking about the Skelton Brothers case. Now, I got to tell you, this one is very difficult to talk about, but I wanted to discuss it because I feel like there needs to be some truth, because in my visions, I see that it's going to be years and years before anything comes to light. So,
which is super sad.
Exactly. So I want to give a little bit of a background on this. This short side of the story is where a woman by the name of Tanya dropped off her children to her parents' house on November 24th, 2010. They were actually supposed to be picked up there by their father and also going to that house that they grew up in to have Thanksgiving. And unfortunately, she never saw them again. Tanya and him were both married in 2002, both began their second marriage thinking they both found love. They both had children from previous relationships, but also decided that they wanted to have children of their own. So they ended up having three kids, Andrew, who was 9 at the time, Alexander, who was 7, and Tanner, who was 5. And all of them disappeared at the same time. Now, at the time of the disappearance, John Skelton was about 35 years old, and he was having a lot of issues. He was kind of down on his luck. He was a truck driver, and unfortunately, he had lost his job due to a DUI, causing a lot of money issues for the family. He also spent a little bit of time in jail for not paying child support for his oldest daughter. Tanya had actually also had her own, legal issues. She had actually started a relationship with a minor years before her children were born. So they've both had their runs with the cops.
This sounds like already a crazy story. Both parents already have major issues going on.
Exactly. Now, Tanya had given these details about her past to John very early on in the relationship, and he claimed to accept it, or she claims that he accepted it, but that doesn't seem to be the case later on. They were going through a lot of marital issues, and he started to get antsy. He wanted everyone, including his wife and children, to move to Florida because he felt like he'd have better job opportunities out there, and he wasn't obtaining anything in Michigan. So he was
looking for a change.
Exactly. He was trying to get her to agree to it, but unfortunately Tanya was not interested in moving to Florida, and also she wasn't interested in jumping through hoops so she could get to that point because she had her legal issues, so she wasn't really allowed to live there unless she did a few things.
Absolutely, which makes it hard for people.
Exactly. Bringing all that up, drudging all that up, who wants to do that?
Absolutely nobody.
One day prior to the disappearance of the children, John Skelton decided to take his children out of school randomly, and they immediately called the mother. They had let her know that he had taken them out of school and was taking the kids on a vacation for possibly 2 to 3 weeks, which was a red flag. There was no discussion about the kids going anywhere, so she panicked. She ended up having her friend call the police, and they said that they would call John on behalf of the mother to kind of handle this bizarre situation.
Absolutely.
Well, the officer was able to decipher that he was still in Michigan, hadn't left yet, but he was trying to get in touch with a lawyer and he had an appointment, so he had to wait for that appointment. So he had planned to put the kids in school while he was looking for another job, which was unusual because he didn't even have any of their legal documents to do it anyways. So his story wasn't really making any sense, put up a lot of red flags.
Absolutely. You just take the kids out of one school and you're taking them to a vacation, well, so-called vacation, and then you're just going to put them in school. How did it go from going on a vacation to now you're going to put them in school?
Exactly. And you know what? Tanya was worried, fearful that something was going to happen to her kids. So right away, she tried to find some advice on how she can stop her husband from taking the kids. Well, they came to the conclusion that she needed to file for divorce. And she, in fact, decided to do that day. In a very bizarre twist of fate, while she was trying to convince John to obtain the legal documents like their birth certificates, she was kind of trying to stall him while they tried to obtain this lawyer and legal documents so they can serve him so he could not leave the state with the children. Ironic situation, she ended up contacting the same lawyer who he contacted, and the lawyer ended up letting him know via phone call, hey, I just retained your wife as a client, so I cannot do anything for you. And that freaked him right out. He got upset. He wanted to take the kids away. At this point, he was back at home with the three kids while the two older ones were sitting in the car. The younger one came in to see his mom, and he just left with the two older boys in the car and took off into the night to Florida. So at this point, obviously, the mother was frantic and everything that was going on. It was a crazy situation. She was, however, able to retain her children because she did end up going down to Florida and obtaining all of that. But he did try to come at her and make it sound like he was concerned for his children's behavior based on her abusing them in like a pedophile type of way.
Right. But like anybody knows that you have to you still have to get legal documents to prove you can, you know, take the children one way or another through a court system. You can't just decide, oh, my spouse is abusive, I'm going to take them, even if they are abusive.
Exactly. When they got back to Michigan, John genuinely wanted to fix the marriage. And although Tanya was not comfortable with the idea, she did agree to go to therapy just to keep him off her back and not run away with the kids again, because that was her main concern.
Absolutely. Anything to make sure her children are safe.
Now, the lawyer knew that this man was going to be a difficult one to please, so he had made a suggestion to her that she should let the kids see him to make it look good for her in court. So she felt that it would be okay as long as she kind of agreed to allow for a relationship to happen in the future. She was a little less worried. She was not interested in living with him at the time, so he lived in the family home, and she actually moved elsewhere, pretty close by to the family home, so she can kind of keep an eye out on things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, anybody would if you have the opportunity.
Exactly. And unfortunately, like all crazy, hectic, toxic relationships, it started to fall apart again. The two of them did struggle to get along during this time. They did get into a lot of arguments prior to Thanksgiving weekend. He also even asked to have the kids stay longer, and she was just so fed up with everything he was doing, she said no. When she left the children at her parents' house on Wednesday, she told the kids she would see them again on Friday. During that weekend, John called her demanding to know about their plan and their relationship, wanting to know if they were going to ever get back together. She did inform him that she was over this nonsense and that he had broken her trust, so she kind of suggested it wouldn't happen, and this was the last time she ever heard her children's voices.
Wow.
So, Friday morning, she called him to see if she could pick up the kids early, and he said they were out. They were all out. She was confused because the car was sitting in the driveway at home.
And that would be confusing to anybody.
Exactly, and she can see it. He lied to her, and he said that he left the car there. And then he kept continuously changing his story. He even informed her that he had not even been with the kids, and that a friend by the name of Joanne had the children. And apparently, Joanne had helped her family in the past. He's like, oh, you know, Joanne, you know? Well, she didn't know who the heck Joanne was.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it, or else she wouldn't have been so freaked out over it.
Right. Well, then he informed her that he hurt his foot and he was heading to the hospital, out of the blue.
What the?
Right. And at the hospital, John claimed that he was trying to commit suicide and trying to hang himself, and he was placed on a psych hold.
This dude sounds like a mess.
Her lawyer informed her that she needed to wait until 3 p.m. because that was the agreed time for her to pick up the children. And so she waited until 3 p.m. to call the police, and she did. The police questioned him, and they also questioned him why he would just hand over his children to any particular woman by the name of Joanne. An Amber Alert was issued, and the neighbor was claiming to be the last person to see the children playing on Thanksgiving Day around 2:30 p.m.
Wow. So, like, only a half hour before she was supposed to pick them up?
No, the day prior.
Oh, the day prior.
Yeah. So, in the home, things were smashed and broken, and very unusual items were found, like a rope, a noose, bleach. There was even a bullet on the stairs. In the investigation, they were able to dictate that he had turned his phone off at 4:29 a.m. heading towards Ohio, and then again turned back on 15 minutes later. So the police started to do a search in that area that his phone kind of was turned on, and they had over 200 volunteers trying to find these boys. His mom and dad had also given him an ultimatum, indicating that they wanted him to move back to Florida without the kids and without her. And they wanted an answer by that Wednesday.
It seems like they really didn't want the kids involved in their life either, if they're going to offer only him to come back and not the kids or even his wife at the time.
Well, John, again, changed his story later on, indicating the children were with an undercover group and to help the children get away from the families that are awful to them because his ex was a pedophile, or at least that's what he told everybody, that he just handed his children off to just whomever on the street, you know, to get them away from her because she was such an evil person.
What a narcissistic thing.
No kidding. To this day, there has been no updates on this case, other than John's family stating that they are not concerned about where the children are, and that it's the mom's fault. And they also, might I add a little bit of information on the investigation side of things, they also found on his Google search that he was looking for things on, like, if rat poisoning will kill people, or if they hit somebody over the head, the back of the head, will that kill somebody? And he claimed that those searches were because the kids asked him for that.
Why would you even entertain that? Even if it was the children, why would you even entertain that? You'd just say, oh, I don't know, that's not something you need to know about, and try to change the subject to something else.
Exactly. So he is currently incarcerated for unlawful imprisonment. However, he was not charged with murder as of yet, and he is going to be released in 2025.
Wow, I just have one thing. How could you, as a grandparent, not even be concerned after all this time where your grandchildren are? Like, how do you still think they're safe if you haven't even heard from them?
I don't know. I've never heard of a grandparent like that.
Well, anyways, what do you feel like happened to these kids? Like, what happened when they went missing?
Well, before
they went missing.
Before they went missing? Well, I want to start off with John's younger years. His mom and dad were just your regular, creepy, everyday type of parents. John had a lot of mental health issues throughout his life and would have had these, he had these moments. I see him like blacking out and had no emotions and no feelings. And I actually see like a young John killing animals and hurting other kids and having no feelings or emotions with that either. The parents also have that same emotionless demeanor. And once he met Tanya, he was able to get his life in order a little bit. Unfortunately, due to habit, he started to fall deeper and deeper back into this past behavior. I also feel like it was a trend as well with his previous wife, too.
Most likely.
I feel like he had a lot of pressure from Tanya. Like, she kept telling him that if she was going, she was going to leave him if he didn't get his shit together. I feel like she called him a failure. I feel like she called him a deadbeat. I feel like she called him a lot of things that genuinely triggered him over and over again. However, she didn't know that that was going to unravel this amount of crazy.
Who would?
In his mind, he thought that it was a perfect relationship. It was a perfect, he was a perfect husband, and that he already messed up with his daughter and didn't want another bad dad rep anymore.
Who would? I mean, I know I wouldn't.
When Tanya was not around, now John would spend hours upon hours talking to his mom on the phone, especially when he was unemployed. His mother hated Tanya. She looked at her as though somebody that took away her son. She would never get over that part. She was always super suspicious of her, and at any time John would share any details with her, including the details about her relationship with the minor, she consistently told him that he needed to get away from her and start over. Come back home, calling her a pedophile and a whore.
Also, oh, wow.
Right? Also convinced him that she was the reason he drank. And the reason that he got a DUI. And also the reason he lost his job, of course, because nobody takes accountability. I feel like she consistently offered him a way out, and he did let her know that he wanted to work on things with Tanya. They did, however, give him some hope. If anything ever did not work out, that he could come home at any point. So it gave him a little reassurance, and always had that in the back of his mind. The weekend he had taken the kids out of school, I feel like his mom and dad were pressuring him to come see them, and to bring the kids. And not to let Tanya or anyone else know what was going on. I even feel like the mother genuinely wanted to scare her, especially being around her birthday. She wanted to, like, make it seem like, haha, let's get her. Let's take away the one thing she loves the most, you know?
What sickos. Like, that's just sick.
Definitely. And he also enjoyed the idea of Tanya being hurt. He knew the children meant the world to her and was the biggest way to get back at her. I also feel as though when he was on his trip to Florida, he was driving in his car and was already thinking about ways of disposing of his children, to be completely honest.
So he was almost like premeditating it all.
For sure. I'm also being told he spent countless hours cursing about Tanya and calling her names, may even have had a few conversations on the phone with his mom while the kids were driving. I even feel like there were even statements made about wanting to kill Tanya. I see that the oldest boy, Andrew, had asked his dad multiple times if he was okay. They also continued to want to talk to their mother, and they started to act out a little bit because he wasn't allowing them to do so. So they eventually let the kids call her on her birthday.
Well, that was so nice of them.
How nice, right? John's mom, John's dad, told John that he had to fight and let the court know that she was a danger to the children and abusing them.
Wow. What happened the weekend the kids disappeared?
Well, I am going to get a little bit more graphic here. Viewer's discretion is advised on this part. Now, I feel as though the weekend started off great. The kids and their dad had a great day. And other than the fact that mom was hounding him to leave and go back to Florida, I feel like he kept telling his mom that he was trying to work on his relationship with her. His mother had a really horrible way of making her son paranoid. She knew exactly how to turn his wheels. She told him that Tanya was lying and that she probably had another man in her bed. I feel like she even lied to her son, stating, I know someone who knows her, and she has a boyfriend and a young man, barely legal. Like, I feel like she was just giving it to him.
Any way to make him super paranoid and obsessive now about this situation.
Because she knew he was going to react. Now, obviously, this enraged him. I feel like this was his genuine breaking point, which is why he decided to ask her about the relationship, because she didn't give him the answer he was hoping for. He was going to hurt the children. So he knew ahead of time, if she doesn't get back with me, I am taking the only thing that matters to her. Fuck her. Like,
so he definitely had this premeditated then.
Oh, definitely. Unfortunately, when they spoke on the phone, I feel like she failed his test. And in that moment, he made the decision he was going to not only dispose of the children, but they deserve to be in heaven more than they deserve to be with their mother. And he also wanted to hurt her, but he was going to leave that for another day. Now, he did try to make their last day living as nice as possible in this weird twist of faith. I feel like that may have been a little bit of his guilty conscience playing. But in his mind, he kept telling himself he was doing these children, his blood, a kindness. I feel like he was drinking a bit, not overdoing it, but I do see that he smoked a lot. And this particular time, he was just smoking cigarette after cigarette after cigarette. And that was more than normal, and he was already a heavy smoker.
I mean, I would imagine anybody doing that if you're sitting there literally planning to kill your own flesh and blood.
I also see that he communicated with his mother a lot during that time, and she basically told him to do what he had to do. Although he never indicated he was going to kill the children, he did indicate he was going to take the children away from her, even if it was the illegal route.
Wow.
I also feel like he asked his son questions. They were vulgar, asking them if their mother ever touched their penises for pleasure, and if mommy had ever had boys in the bed, or if she had any other young boyfriends around.
Why would you even ask your children that?
Like,
their ages.
I agree, but he was off his rocker. I feel like the kids were extremely alarmed by these line of questionings, obviously, and they were confused, but they did answer truthfully and told their father that nothing happened. I don't believe that Tanner had a lot to say in relation to this, but I do feel that the older two did let him know that they loved their mother, and their mother never hurt them or anyone for that matter. I feel like he was angry because he felt like his kids were lying, gave him a little bit more fuel. The more the night progressed, the crazier he got. I feel like he went through the entire house collecting different items and trying to find the best way to kill his children without any sort of repercussions. I don't necessarily mean legally, I mean having to face his children while doing it.
Wow.
Right? I feel like he was experimenting with a few items on himself to see what would work and what would not work. And I feel like this is actually where he may have gotten his injury. I also feel that he definitely did Google methods on how to kill someone without a lot of resistance. I feel like he finally came to the conclusion that giving the kids poison in their food would be the best option. I feel like he put large quantities of poison in their food.
That's so sick. How could you even sit there watching somebody eat poison, knowing that it's in there?
He thought that this was the kindest way, and again, the route to take, the pussy way.
But do you even understand when someone ingests poison, what it actually does? It is actually the most painful death ever.
Of course it is.
Hitting them over the back of the head would have been less painful, honestly.
Right? I feel like he made some sort of concoction and then got rid of the evidence. So it wasn't just one item, it was a few different things. I feel like he put all the evidence into a garbage bag. I see that the children all started to feel sick, of course.
Well, yeah.
And I feel like he just kept telling them that it was a flu and to drink water and to get to bed and don't worry. Now, obviously, the kids are going to be struggling at this point. And I see, and this is the most heartbreaking piece of this story in my eyes, that little boy Tanner was the first one to pass. I see that he had a tummy pain. And when he went to sleep, he never woke up. I feel like he was crying out and begging for his mother. And he kept telling his children his mother would be coming soon. So he kept telling him, like, she's coming. This poor kid had no idea.
And he never did, in fact, get their mother.
No. With Alexander, Alexander was probably the most difficult one. He was fighting through it. Although he was struggling physically throughout the pain in his stomach, and all through his body, like, he shows me things were going numb. He pushed his hardest. He kept telling his dad he needed his mommy and that he needed to go to the hospital. Now imagine a 7-year-old telling you what you need to do as a parent.
Right, like, take me to the hospital. I'm super sick.
He was the loudest. He was screaming. So much so that John started to panic. And I feel like at this point, he ended up suffocating him. I see that he told him to lay down pretty aggressively, said it would get better. I feel like the amount of poison he gave his son was not enough to kill him, or he didn't eat enough of his food. So the suffocation was what ended up killing him.
Wow.
Andrew was there, the oldest, and saw all of this going on. His father continued to tell him that he was just trying to help him get back to sleep. And that was basically the reason he was suffocating him, and that he would feel better in the morning. Andrew was not stupid. He was the oldest and also the one that I've been getting all this information from. He showed me that he had seen his brothers get killed by his dad. As he was trying to feel better from his pain, he had a plan to sneak out of the house and go to his mother's, or at least go to the neighbors. He even wanted to go anywhere to get out of that house because he knew something was not right.
He was in that fight mode.
He was. As he started to black out, things became more and more difficult to see. He shows me his vision was in and out. He shows me that his father was putting his brothers into garbage bags. He shows me that he did it in a very disturbing manner. It wasn't gentle. It was just like they were just disposable. And he kept checking his phone and panicking back and forth, screaming. He even said that his dad threw up a few times. Now, that's the last part Andrew remembers while he was alive.
Wow, that is so sad.
I know.
Do you know what happened next? Like, do you possibly know where the boy's remains might be?
Okay, well, John was very aware that he would be suspect number one. He wanted to make sure that the kids' bodies would never be found or be able to prove that he killed them. I feel like he left his phone on and drove the complete opposite direction that he had planned to go. Then he shut his phone off. I feel like he was very aware of the schedule for the garbage man for some reason. I'm not sure how he knows that information.
Well, I mean, he's a truck driver. You would think, like, you know, driving on the road all day, you see other big trucks, you're pretty aware. And when you deliver to people, you kind of know when they're getting their deliveries and when they get rid of old stuff.
Okay. Well, I see that he had gone to, like, a plaza where there was a dumpster. There may have actually, I feel like there was technically two dumpsters there, and the dumpsters were kind of tucked away. You couldn't actually see it on the road if you're driving by. And I see that the two garbage bins were already pretty full before he got there. And I feel like he took all four garbage bags, including the one with all of the evidence in it, and stuffed them into the garbage like they were trash. I also feel like this was only about 20 to 30 minutes away from where they lived. I feel like it was more of a congested area, but obviously being so early in the morning, nobody saw anything.
Wow. Do you feel like John's parents knew anything then, or do they know anything now?
These two. I feel like they don't know the nitty-gritty details of what happened as of yet, but I do feel like when he gets out of prison, he will tell his family everything. I also feel like his mother made a statement over and over and over again and embedded it in his mind, like the kids are better off dead than being with her. I feel like he didn't tell them that he did it directly, but I do believe he told them that someone else did it and they are happy about it. It's messed. They feel like the evil that Tanya carried within her was also within the children, and they felt that when they saw the kids last. She was extremely concerned that the children would end up being pedophiles like their mother. And also, they don't blame John at all. In fact, this is all Tanya's fault. They tell everyone they meet, or they used to, about this situation.
What the? This family is super messed up. Well, John's family is super messed up. Like, how could you even look at small children and be like, oh, you're evil and you're going to be a pedophile? Like, and of course the children are going to be upset and be depressed. Their parents are going through something. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Wow. So do you think anything will happen with this case? Will anything be solved?
Well, I see two things happening with this particular case. I see that John will want some sort of fame out of this, and I see him releasing some sort of interview. It may provide a few clues as to where the kids are located. However, I don't see anything being confirmed about that. I also see that Tanya will also respond back with her own interview and her own statement. The other thing I see is that if our technology continues to go in the direction that it plans on, approximately 8 years from now, we're going to actually have some new technology that could potentially be something amazing to solve a lot of our old cases. And I feel like this case will be one of those cases to be solved. I can't explain exactly how it'll happen. It's nothing we can comprehend at the moment. But I do feel like evidence will come forward and he will be found guilty and he will never see the light of day. And I keep feeling like something in relation to a death sentence for him. Now, I don't necessarily know if that'll be in prison or if that's something that he'll receive, but I see him dying when he's there.
Wow. I mean, well, we can only hope for him. And I mean, if you say that you feel like it's about like 30 minutes from where he's actually located or was located at the time, I feel like they need to start looking in, you know, landfills and everything like that. I mean, you might not find much. You might only find some remains, but something, even their clothes or something. So do you have anything else to add to the situation?
Well, the kids are very, very interested in sending off a message. So just so everybody knows that there are still to this day photos out there of these kids missing. They actually moved them a lot and put their own little two cents into it. Kind of let everybody else know that they're still there. Rainbows let their mom and sisters and nieces and nephews know that they're watching over them. Even though it's sad, they all are happy and together, especially when it's thunderstorming. They enjoy being outside and loud. They dance and are always loud. They love their outdoors adventures. They show me hanging out in the backyard playing games. They have shown me that they're teenagers as well, and they still take care of each other no matter what.
Wow, that's I mean, as sad as it is, it's beautiful that they're still enjoying the afterlife. And just as any little boy would do, loves being outdoors, loves the rain and all of that. Well, thank you so much for bringing all this information to us.
You're welcome. It was a lot.
It was definitely a lot. Let's bring this to a lighter note now. So can you tell us any cool stories or story from any readings you've had in the past?
Well, yeah. So I had just started doing readings professionally at this point, and I had a friend who had a son that was going through a lot of physical health related issues. I felt so bad for him, and he was on dialysis for his kidney. Now, I kept reassuring my friend at the time that not only was he going to get a kidney transplant, that it would happen in the middle of the night and he would survive this, and although it might seem a little touch and go for a while, he'll be okay. And I told her that, and 6 months later, everything I had said came true. And this was my first moment that I felt like this is what I needed to do.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you have anything like maybe more recently than that?
Yes, actually. Well, this past weekend, I made a TikTok in memory of Eddie Guerrero, and I wanted to give a little...
Yeah, for the Royal Rumble.
Exactly. I wanted to give a little shout out to him and give a message to all his fans. And the next day, Eddie Guerrero's daughter wrote, and I quote, "Love that you honored my dad," under my video. And it was the most incredible feeling. I truly felt so significantly special in that moment.
I mean, anybody would. That's amazing. At least one of his children reached out to you and said thank you. I personally was a huge Eddie Guerrero fan when he was around, so I remember watching him growing up. So it was really good and really awesome to see his message to everybody, and it seemed like it really made his daughter happy.
Yeah, I mean, and this work is not easy. You always want to run away from it because there is a lot of crazy things that go on. People think I'm insane, but these moments are what keep me going. This makes me feel like, regardless of the skepticism in the world, I got to keep doing my thing.
Exactly. Always. You have to keep doing your thing. Keep on shining. Thank you so much, guys, for joining today on this case, the Skelton brothers. I know this was pretty hard to listen to, but I hope we get some light shed on this sometime soon. Thank you for your support.
Yes, and we will be back next Thursday.
Keep on listening, guys.
Bye.